I'd like to welcome everybody to this final communal event of this year's DGSKA conference. While welcoming you all, it also falls to me to bid you farewell at this time. So thank you for making your way here to the southernmost home of German anthropology. We very much hope you all had productive and pleasant days, took some swing at the conference party to carry home, and will have a safe and comfortable journey onwards. Following on this plenary session, the only thing in terms of official events will be the regional working groups, but of course we encourage any further informal gatherings in the corridors. I have a space here for last minute announcements, but I don't think we have any, so I'll just continue. This plenary is a public event and has been announced as such at the university, the city, and online, so I therefore want to extend my greetings to members of the public and colleagues from other departments who have chosen to join us here this morning. Populist persuasions. Already when we were planning the conference, choosing the topic of populism seemed very apt and timely for a plenary. But in the meantime, the debates have escalated, and not only has the media become more concerned about populism, but so have our and related disciplines. More for your entertainment and edification than for immediate engagement, here is a partial list of publications on initiatives on populism from colleagues that mostly came out in the time since we decided on this topic for a plenary. And its plethora raises the question of what does this plenary want to add to the debate? What do we contribute after even an annual review of anthropology review article has been published? Well, we chose to honor the conference title and ask about populism in terms of communication, persuasion, negotiation, and rhetoric. Brubaker calls populism a discursive and stylistic repertoire, and I think indeed that this is the way in which ethnography can add to the mushrooming debates. Set a minimal definitional framework for the discussion ahead of us. In general, populism thrives on binary oppositions and clear dichotomies. Inside, outside, we, them, top, bottom, elites and common people. And these simple structures are actually a source of its persuasive power. More particularly, the escalating discursive division between we, the common people, and they, the elites, suggests ongoing systemic injustice and suppression of the genuine will of the people. Even more specifically, the vertically opposed enemy is often imagined to be an entire liberal political class in alliance with state institutions, media, and capital, and often enough, experts and scientists. Globalization, on the one hand, embodies all these concerns, and the translocal or even post-local cosmopolitan becomes an enemy, as do other people out of place. It is from this position that demands for the return to the national state as a dominant political framework are voiced. Solutions must be simpler, sovereignty must be more tangible, and action must be more direct. In rhetorical terms, we could call these the tropes of populism, the figurative arguments that seem to need no further justification. Inza Koch, one of our speakers today, cites her otherwise apolitical residence in a British housing estate with the words, very simple, we need local control. But this evocative expression, with an introverted we, an alternative denying need, an insular local and the authoritarian control, this really encapsulates the sentiments that characterize what we call populism today. The link of populism to the conference topic is clear now. Negotiation itself is antithetical to populism. Trying to declare that matters are complicated, trying to negotiate in an open-ended manner, these are surefire ways of ending up in the camp of the enemy. Populism feeds on crisis, on urgency, on immediacy. And an aim is to deny the very idea that alternatives are viable, desirable, or effective, and to delegitimize efforts of pluralistic engagement. This tendency is, of course, exacerbated in what is called today's post-factual or post-truth environment of liquefying modernity, where even scientific findings can be classed as just one non-privileged opinion among many. Tangible crises, then, are grand occasions to declare an end, a necessary end to the status quo. It cannot go on like this. And populism, thus understood, starts with the end of negotiations. So what's the new beginning? What comes after the end of negotiations? So while we can ask who and who is not a populist, in the end, it's also a denunciatory label for politicians to use against each other and little seems to be gained by essentialisms and reductions on our part. It seems more productive and generative to discuss actions and policies as populist in character and to assess the conditions under which this repertoire is, in fact, effective in persuading people. This, too, underlines that it is promising to approach populism not by assigning people directly to the category of the populist, but as a problem of communication, of political style, of argumentative contradiction, and of the crafting of social positions and subjectivities. Discussions of populism must address the question of positionality. What effect does a reputation, or in rhetorical terms, the ethos of a speaker have on the truth value and the relevance of what is said by them? Anthropology covers these bases really well. We are commonly for the little guy, as David Graeber had it. We are usually critical of, or at least highly sensitive to, centrist or statist government practice, but we are also sensitive to people denouncing others as populist to avoid having to deal with possible legitimate grievances. As Mazzarella, in his review article, suggests, we put much trust in the common sense of common people. But what do we do when these common people and this common sense dismiss what we stand for? He calls populism a deep provocation to anthropology, but in turn, of course, anthropology is a deep provocation to ethno-nationalists. That the sort of people we often center in our analyses are now among the first to reject expertise and academic knowledge is troubling, and this too is a topic addressed by our speakers, as is the role of the political economy in shaping the very rhetorical environment. To our contributors, Chris Hahn has been director of the Max Planck Institute for Social Anthropology in Halle for 20 years. He has outlined in December 2017 in a full-page commentary in the FAZ newspaper why populists are useful. I'm sure many of you took note. After Chris, we'll have contribution by Insa Koch, associate professor of law and anthropology from the LSE, who has undertaken research in English council estates and in general, as it says O'Reilly on her website, on austerity Britain. The final speaker will be Mario Krämer from the University of Siegen in Cologne, who works on political anthropology of Southern Africa and has recently finished his habilitation. He attempts what we all should be doing more of, namely comparison, thus opening up the question of quite different populisms beyond the brief sketch I've offered above. As with the other plenaries, each speaker has 20 minutes. Afterwards, we'll have hopefully approximately 20 minutes for discussion. The discussion can be in English or in German. All three plenary speakers are fluent in German, so feel free to ask the questions in any language. My name is Felix Gierke, and I now hand over to Chris.